I think what Insight Global did, again, we had no idea what we were doing at the time, but we created really, really clear metrics of accountability that were the results that mattered to us most. And so whether you run a consulting firm or an engineering team or whatever, the key to culture is not coming up with culture KPIs. It's not coming up with like these metrics of like, we're going to track turnover now. It's actually figuring out what result matters to us most, and not like matters to us. No, what result do we really care about? We say businesses don't exist to have a great culture. They exist to serve their purpose. And your culture is either going to help or hurt your ability to get your purpose. And so what we have to figure out as leaders is, okay, if our purpose is X, what are the key results that we can tangibly roll up our sleeves and get to work and impact every day, so that your purpose isn't just a poster, but it's something your people get to attack and go after every day. And then we create accountability around those really important business results, knowing that if we make like Ted Lasso and develop a really strong people orientation, and we take care of our people and we get great feedback and we act on it, it's going to help us get the results.
This episode is brought to you by Kyla Partners. Kyla are Bullhorn's specialists and Bullhorn's first implementation partner. Our solutions have helped 950 companies worldwide to streamline, automate, and customize to get the most out of Bullhorn. Our products provide you with tremendous ROI, including a complete document management system, Kylo Awesome Docs, and the most powerful data management tool in the ecosystem, Kylo Data Tools. To learn more, visit kylopartners.com.
This episode is brought to you by Leap Consulting Solutions. Digitally transform your business the right way, the Leap way. Visit www.leapconsultingsolutions.com to find out more on how your business can build, change, and adopt technology the right way, the Leap way.
What is going on, Lauren? How are you today?
I am so fly, as you say.
Ooh, you say super fly. I just usually say I'm good or give you some rant about
something. I say super fantastic. And super. You say super fly.
I think we tried to once say super fabulistic expialidocious and we failed. I think I just did it correctly, by the way. That was impressive.
You did it. That's not bad. That's not bad. I'm impressed.
Lauren, I am on week 6 of a strength and power program with Peloton. And I have, like, the last time I did this, I was super mentally fried because I was doing a running program too. I learned the hard way not to do that because I couldn't get out of bed, like mentally just exhausted. But this morning I didn't want to work out and I did the workout and I'm super fried. And
super fried?
Yeah. My nervous system is like, you are an idiot. Why are you working out so hard? Like, it's heavy lifting. Today was 1 minute on, 30 seconds off for 35 minutes of heavy, just different exercises. And yeah, and shout out to everyone who is still working out for their New Year's resolution. That was a long read. That's what I wanted to say.
I got up at 5 a.m. and Cody tried to kill me. So.
Oh, Cody Rigsby?
Yeah, it was intervals today. So, and it was hard intervals, like your resistance at like 60 and 70. And so I got, my legs were a little shaky afterwards.
You can never be mad at Cody for making your bum look good. So anyway.
I know, you this is right. I'm just trying to keep mine off the floor.
Hey, all right. Gravity. I think John Mayer wrote a song about that. Anyway, all right, guys. Probably very related is your ability to be physically in shape, to be mentally healthier, to create an incredible culture. And with that amazing segue, we're super excited to have, it's Steven Wasik, right, on the Zoom call, but it's Steve, who is the VP of Culture and Strategy, right, at Insight Global Compass. How's it going, man?
Yep, that's it. Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, we're supposed to be talking about culture, but I could keep going on the working out.
How are you doing? What are you doing?
Well, yeah, Cody, I've spent some time with Cody, so I know how that goes. That guy's intense. But yeah, similar to you, I'm trying to work out more, and it's really tiring. Like, it's like super tiring. Everyone's like, it gives you more energy. You're going to love it. It's great. But yeah, like you, yesterday especially, I woke up really early, worked out really hard, and then I was brain dead all day. So I don't know about this. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, maybe it's just not so good for us.
Right.
I drank bone broth. Like I drank a cup of bone broth.
Yeah.
And I got like my brain back, to be honest with you. But yet last week, I was feeling fantastic. But then I'm the third workout of a 4 workout set, like for the week. And the first 2 just took it out of me. So yeah.
I'm going to keep going because I do believe eventually I'm going to get more energy. But yeah, I've just been exhausted.
Is this a new, like, start to a new habit? Like, new sequence?
So, yeah.
Like, you probably did this before, but, like, are you restarting?
Yeah, in the same way I love culture and thinking about all the, you know, different experiments we can run. Similarly, I love the body and testing all kinds of stuff. And I've been doing all kinds of crazy stuff, fasting and not drinking for long periods of time, whatever. And so now I'm like, well, you know what? Let me get into this working out thing. People talk about that a lot. So I'm like going hard like you are. And yeah, it's really tiring. That's my synopsis of it all so far. Nice.
So one thing you lose a lot when you're working out really hard is vitamin D3. So check out that. If you're not adding that into your system or you're not getting enough sunlight, it causes mental fog in jiu-jitsu and wrestlers and jiu-jitsu players and wrestlers, which I used to suffer from. Anyway, it's not related to culture, but it kind of is. So guys, if you're not aware, Insight Global, in 2019, did a lot of really like great self-reflecting, I must say, and came to the conclusion that their culture wasn't what they wanted it to be. And Steve, that's a great segue to kind of tee up how you ended up at a staffing company that has a culture consulting business.
Yeah. It's a really interesting question, right? Why would a staffing company launch a culture business? But It was a bit earlier than that. It was 17 when we had our really bad year where 15, 16, we're still growing, but profitability was down and we were starting to see this like really big uptick in turnover. And then 17 was like the shit hit the fan year because I think we hired like 1,600 people and fast forward 12 months, like 1,150 of them had left. So that's not good. I remember looking at the data and it was like, your turnover is over 100%. And I was like, how is that possible? I didn't realize you could do that, but yeah, so that was, and it's funny because the reason I took the job with Insight Global was because of the culture. I didn't, you know, coming out of school, I had no idea what staffing was, no clue, but I just, of all the interviews I did, I walked into the, at the time it was in Rosemont, Illinois, which we called our Chicago office. And it was just this amazing group of people that were caring and genuine and authentic. And again, I had no idea what they did, but I just wanted to be a part of it. So that was kind of the origin of Insight Global. And we grew really quickly, I think, because we had this great culture. But you just fast forward, sometimes what got you here won't get you there. And we hit a dark period. So what we did was this thing called Compass, where Bert Bean is our CEO today, and he was newly promoted in 18. He just took his leaders away from the office and he kind of put a huge crack in the foundation of what our culture was by just giving people time and space to get open and to get real about kind of what was going on. And I think at the time we had this very like fear-based command and control type culture and Compass smashed that. And it helped us develop this totally new way of looking at our people and this totally new way of running our business that then set us up for huge success in 19 and 20 and especially 21, where we kind of built a new vision of how we wanted to lead and got a huge group of people on board to head in that direction.
Well, it's not an easy thing to just rewrite a culture. I mean, I love the self-reflection, but that seems like a daunting task. How do you begin doing something like that?
Yeah, so it's super timely to talk about this actually, because there was a guy that Compass has built a relationship with. His name's Ed Schein, and he actually just passed away this past week. He's 94 actually. And he was like living and breathing and practicing culture literally like right up until the moment he passed. But what we learned from Ed kind of after we actually did this our own without anyone's help was that the start of rethinking a culture, it starts with connection. And it starts with becoming known and being willing to kind of open up and to share some vulnerability, to share and to get open and to get real with one another. And that's what that Compass meeting with Bert was. It was time away where he just asked us 4 questions. And they were like, they were pretty personal. And if we're honest, everybody ended up crying. But it was this moment to just stop thinking about our current strategy and our current challenges and just like you talk at the dinner table as people, put away all of your status and put away all of the posturing that we kind of can do as we go to work and try to earn promotions. It was like, let's set that aside and just be people. And then by doing that, we just got so clear about the company we wanted to be. We became so much more authentic in our pursuit of growth. And we built values, we built a purpose. And there's something to those tiers, because it wasn't just words that we built. It was this vision of something we were going to go do. And we were locked in on doing it.
I love the collaboration, but B, I think you said something that's really profound. It's you put all the titles and all the posturing and all of the, we'll call it, dynamics that go on to having those types of meetings where somebody coming wanting to one up another person, or, you know, when all of that is just washed away, you are just humans coming together to try and solve problems. What's been the difference now? I mean, you've clearly, it's palpable when you talk to somebody from your organization, that how invested people are in the culture, how invested they are in the vision and values and what you're building. And I love the autonomy that has been given. So how did you take action? You know, because it's one thing to have, I just love that, you know, all of the walls get to come down in a conversation like that. But then there's the part, and it's easy to get caught up in that. The hard part is the taking the action and making the change. So how do you guide an organization of your size through a change of that magnitude?
Well, yeah, I want to answer this in a way that's super useful for folks, because Insight Global did create a really meaningful change in a pretty quick amount of time. Yes. And I didn't say this in the intro, but so much so that that's now what I get to do every day. Like now Compass, which is a component of Insight Global, we take the process that IG went through to create change to all kinds of companies across North America. So the process that Insight Global followed, again, we established, it started with connection, started with vulnerability. It started with getting away from the focus of the ego to the focus of the group. And that is, that's the guy Ed I spoke about. That's really like what Ed confounded is. That is the starting place. There is no magic bullet. You can't just buy recognition software or slap a new set of language into a company and think you're going to be good. You got to go there as people. That's the starting point. And on the other side of that connection, you need to form a vision of what you want to go do in the world, why it matters, and how you're going to do it. And then it becomes this process of looking at yourself and evaluating what's going to be different. So no different than us trying to get in shape and be better humans. We have to go to work and do the hard stuff to unwind what wasn't helping, what doesn't help us, what no longer serves us. And so really simply, it's like you focus on the vision of where you want to go. You connect it to some results. And then you just kind of get to stop treating culture as this bottomless, confusing pit of whatever theme is most buzzworthy on LinkedIn. You can just set all that aside and then just look inward at your organization and go, what is helping and hurting our ability to get the results that help us advance as a business and that help us take better care of our people? And then you can just iterate and you can act and you just keep going forward. And the thing about this is, much like working out, is it doesn't stop. Like too often we see people treated like this linear process, like we're building software and then we get it out there and everybody uses it and we can just go back to doing our jobs. It's like working out. If you want to be healthy, it's just a constant practice. And it's just revolutions of that process of connecting to results and then getting feedback about what's helping and hurting and then acting on that feedback in a consistent way and in a way that's very people oriented. That's what Insight Global did, and that's what they continue to do. And it's cool. It's really cool because it's fun to show up and watch this group of people and just see how good they've gotten.
Lauren does this with technology.
Yeah. It's cool to see on the outside because, I mean, you definitely, well, thank you, Rob, but you definitely see it on the outside. But I think you said something that's really meaningful. And this goes for, I think, anybody It's the habit that is the hardest thing. You know, we are what we repeatedly do. Therefore, you know, excellence is not, it's a habit, right? Yeah. The whole Aristotle quote.
We could say the quiet part out loud. Like, I talked about fitness at the beginning on purpose because I knew that's what we're going to be talking about. Like, consistency is the thing. And doing the boring.
Yeah, doing the monotonous every single day to create the muscle, you know, to create the muscle, to create. And I think that is what it's what I see missing when it comes to change management, training, adoption. What we miss is the understanding of how hard it is to start the repetition. You know, it's repetition that is required on the little things all the time. You know, when you're doing a digital transformation, you can't just assume that once I implement the technology and I do 2 weeks of training, I get to just, okay, bye. You know, now you're trained, go forth and conquer. That's not it.
Well, to that point, I said this, I don't know if I said this on the podcast the other day, but onboarding is one thing. Training is ongoing. Like, you onboard people once, you train them continuously. So like, you might be onboarded into culture training, right, Steve, to you, but what happens every week or every day is the training part. So
we love the word habit, and actually the process that we've built to take what can feel really complex and make it simple is the Compass Culture Habits. Okay. And it is a system that we ingrain into other organizations now that, to your point, makes culture this ongoing practice. That isn't training or a theme of the month or the year. It's like, no, we're going to do this as an organization now. We're going to get connected. We're then going to use that level of transparency that comes out of connection, because that's what we find. When we offer some safety, when we offer some connection, all of a sudden we can get this level of transparency that we wouldn't have gotten if we didn't connect. That's why we have to do it. Then we call it explore, where we get real about what's helping and hurting our ability to get the results that matter to us. Then we key in on improvements that are really specific based on that transparency. And then we learn. Like, such a crucial piece of culture is learning. So culture is what we believe. It's like what we fundamentally believe about how to do the things that we need to do. The only way to change our beliefs is to go through cycles of learning that a new way is better than an old way. And that's what happened at IG. We went through this really, really big period of learning, that this people orientation, showing up to take care of your people first and being empathetic and listening and hearing from folks, it gets you way better business results. And now I love seeing this, the new leaders at Insight Global, they would never even think of another way, because it's just, you know, it's served us so well. So yeah. We connect, we explore, we improve, and we learn. That's the structure. And those are habits that leaders have to learn to build to really go at culture.
Yeah. I love it. It was really fun talking to Jared and everyone's love at Compass of Ted Lasso, which is not a comedy. It's a show about building company culture.
That's true.
If you're not seeing that as you watch it, then go back and watch it, because from what that locker room was, and the locker room is the most important part of that entire show. Whatever's happening when Ted is in the locker room or in the office is the actual valuable stuff. There's other places. But I coached high school football at a very successful high school down here in South Florida. And yeah, we have the best talent, but there's always teams that are equally as talented when you get to the playoffs. So winning the real games start usually later in the season for us, but we had to win them to win the state title. And it was the culture, and it was all the stuff that happened in the off season. If you can win the locker room, then you can win the game. I think it's like an easy, like the too long didn't read version of it.
Absolutely. A million. And
you can win the locker room. You can win the game. There's a t-shirt, Rob.
God damn, I did it again. Yeah. So, I mean, and by the way, the Ted Lasso Build-A-Bear came out yesterday. I bought one this morning because I really wanted it. I bought the biscuits with the boss one because I just think it's funny. Anyway, we talk about it a lot. I think about culture a lot from that perspective, Steve, is from my time as a coach. So
it's super applicable. And you are spot on. That show is a really great example of culture change. And if you're trying to change the culture of your team, why not watch season one? Because it's super enjoyable. And it take notes, because there's all kinds of genius in that about how to improve culture.
Yeah. I mean, he's just giving you like clues and, you know, time to win the whole damn thing. So
that's it.
Steve, so, you know, Inside Global went through this great change. We're not, you know, you kind of gave us the hints that the results have been fantastic since you did it. What maybe to think about, like, if you were to give some easy tips to people, maybe like 3 to 5 easy tips to people to kind of observe or to help figure out if the culture's working or not, you know, what would those be? Like, what do you guys usually do? Or like, you know, you're creating marketing content for people. Like, what would you say in that list?
Yeah, I think that there's one sort of really simple universal truth that is really important to think about as you think about the health of a culture. And the universal truth is that when we go at things in a group and as a team, we're going to be able to do better work than if we go at them alone. So to me, that is so, whether you are a high school sports team, a company, or a country, the more that you're able to go at things in really collaborative ways, where your team kind of celebrates the differences that your team is made up of, the differences in personality type and strengths and experience and perspectives. It's a stupid analogy, but it's like, you can't build a treehouse with 8 hammers. You need like a tape measure and a saw, and you certainly do need a hammer. But I think one of the most obvious, simple ways to evaluate the health of a culture is to meet a group of people. And is everybody trying to be a hammer? Because the leader's a hammer. And so like everybody's fitting into that hammer box. Or are we the team where it's like, the leader might be a bit of a hammer, but oh my gosh, they celebrate the heck out of the differences. And this team is able to put the collective differences online to make them stronger. It's so obvious and simple, but so powerful to just see how because it's how we work, right? As humans, we like want to fit into a mold and fit into a type, but it's not productive. And over time, we lose when we do so.
So I think one of the, I love that we're giving our, it's always our goal to give these little tangible pieces of like tactical action that our listeners can take. Accountability with a change like this is probably the most important thing. So if you're going to sustain it, right? So whether it's your self-regulated accountability, right? So there's ownership in that responsibility. And if you're creating a safe culture, people are going to naturally feel that ownership and responsibility. But tell our listeners how you create accountability for this culture. You know, are there metrics that you're looking at or things that you're looking at every week or every month or every day? I mean, I think outside of like the attitude that we want to see, what are some measures of accountability that you can give our something tangible to give our listeners that you're watching to know that this culture change is working? Obviously, we know that safe teams, good culture get better results. But, you know, how do you measure accountability with a culture change like this?
It's such a good question. Such a good question, because we do this wrong. It's like one of the really big problems in this industry is that we're doing this wrong. Way too often, the accountability to build a safe team and to build the right culture falls on your engagement scores, or it falls on a survey, or it falls on, you know, things that can feel so disconnected from the work. And I think what Insight Global did, again, we had no idea what we were doing at the time, but we created really, really clear metrics of accountability that were the results that matter to us most. And so whether you run a consulting firm or an engineering team or whatever, the key to culture is not coming up with culture KPIs. It's not coming up with like these metrics of like, we're going to track turnover now. It's actually figuring out what result matters to us most, and not like matters to us. No, what result do we really care about? We say, businesses don't exist to have a great culture. They exist to serve their purpose. And your culture is either going to help or hurt your ability to get your purpose. And so what we have to figure out as leaders is, okay, if our purpose is X, what are the key results that we can like tangibly roll up our sleeves and get to work and impact every day, so that your purpose isn't just a poster, but it's something your people get to attack and go after every day. And then we create accountability around those really important business results. knowing that if we make like Ted Lasso and develop a really strong people orientation and we take care of our people and we get great feedback and we act on it, it's going to help us get the results. So that's the trick of it all, is to figure out how can we go after real business results that matter to stakeholders and shareholders and all of those things. And then, but set expectations that the way we're going to get those is with people orientation. It's by living these culture habits that we talked about. It's with safety. Like that's the key. And it's such a problem. People go in the wrong, the people just show up and culture becomes this, like I look at LinkedIn every day and it's like, no, culture is quiet quitting, quiet promoting. Now it's quiet firing. When will it end?
Those things make me angry. Now it's quiet
Stop
quiet
it.
Promoting. It enrages me.
Am I getting paid more to be quiet promoted or?
It's like, no.
Otherwise it's not being promoted.
That's a problem. That's actually a really big
problem. That's a bad culture thing.
Because culture really matters. Like the way we get connected matters. And all of that stuff is like window dressing that pushes people away from wanting to invest in this. So I could go on, but I will stop, Laura.
That was fantastic.
We Rob and I do not love.
We love culture.
Like this scare tactic headline. Ah. You know, it's just so annoying. The quiet quitting and the quiet firing, the quiet. Promoting. I'm just like, come on, guys.
Yeah, every software we do an episode about it to get listens, but you know,
because it's funny.
Because people are loving it. Anyway.
But something that you said, okay, you're just speaking my language, like right here. and I just love it so much because it starts with the end in mind, right? Yeah. And then you work backwards from there. We're starting with the mission, the vision, and values. We're looking at, because that's how people kind of look at us sideways, because the way we build tech stacks, our first question is, what is your mission, vision, and values, right? Because the technology that you acquire should be a representation of how you want people to feel when they engage with your brand, right? That's what technology is supposed to do. And you're saying the same thing from a culture perspective. Start with the end in mind. Find the meaningful, you know, contributing factors to each one of those things. You work that backwards to something that's measurable.
Yeah.
And then it's meaningful across the board. Those metrics become something that people are associated and attached to in an entirely different way, which I think is just awesome. There's no other word.
All right.
Two other things on that.
Oh,
that are just huge that I think are really important because we're like heading in this general direction, and things that are additive to it would be if you're a leader listening to this right now and you're like, okay, I got to connect to results and great. Ask yourself, what are we doing to manage culture right now? How much of it is around the work? How much of it is in the work? What I mean by around the work is too often we meet folks and they're like, well, we got to improve recognition. We have to improve perks or benefits or we're bad at collaboration. And so we bought this new software tool. That all that stuff is around the work. So is sometimes, unfortunately, the mission, vision, values. Hopefully those are in the work, but at too many organizations, they're around the work. They're a t-shirt, they're a poster, they're a badge. In the work is really what's going to generate how people feel at the end of the day. And so as the leader, you got to ask yourself, how am I solving the problems that are really creating friction and strain on my people? Am I only doing it out around the work, hoping some magic happens where that stuff filters down and someone makes a different choice as they pursue the job? Or am I like getting into the work to go, this is a problem and we're going to really roll up our sleeves and go to work inside of the work people do? So that point is major. And then once you start doing that, what you'll find is that you'll find some really hard problems and it'll get overwhelming. You'll be like, how do I fix this for 3,000 people? One of the things that Compass does is we take a, just like you would in a software build, we start small, we pilot, take on like an agile mindset where let's prove that we can build a better culture with a group of 8 people at our company. And then let's try to scale that to 80 and then maybe 800 and then maybe 8,000. But too often we just treat culture like something we can do all at once. And we're just going to announce some new language. We're going to roll out a couple improvements and then magically the culture is going to change in 6 months. It's really hard. It's one of the hardest things we need to do in business. And so starting small, piloting, going at some of our challenges and then scaling it is something that doesn't happen enough in this industry.
No, it's like, you know, I use the word technology, right? Like I've been exposed to these technologies, which can be like cultural or mindset or personal, like improvement or growth things, right? But if you call it technology, you can roll it out like technology, which Lord is an expert at. But to your point, yeah, you don't do it to a business of 3,000 all at once. You build champions, you have field testers, you make sure it's going to work. You start to market internally. You treat your first customer first, which is your employees, not the candidates or contacts you work with. Your first customer is your employees. And once you learn that and you can serve them well and create an incredible spot for them and feel and emotions for them, probably going to be a lot better off downstream, or definitely going to be a lot better off downstream. Not probably. So
that's it.
Yeah. Great. Well, we could probably do this all day and just nerd out way too much. But Steve, I have a book. Have you ever read the book When the Game Stands Tall?
No. I'll write it down.
Okay. So the reason why I am saying this book to you is because I was exposed to it when I was coaching. Have you ever heard of De La Salle High School? It's up in the Bay Area.
Yeah, totally. De La Salle.
130 game winning streak.
Who's the quarterback that came from them? Was Mark?
There's a few. Maurice Jones-Drew.
Okay.
There's a running back that came from that program.
Yep.
So, you know, all good football high school, like all good football teams eat dinner together. They break bread together the day before a game and usually the day of the game. The day before the game, De La Salle had a habit of being very vulnerable with each other about what was going on in their lives. And this stood out to me. And so you knew why Maurice Jones-Drew was playing the game. You knew why your quarterback, why your linebackers were playing the game. And it created a connection that had an incredible result, right? 138 game winning streak does not come easily, but understanding, you know, everyone's why and then being vulnerable with each other, to your point, what you guys did, was a pretty cool thing that could lead, you know, to really great connection.
Yeah, I don't know the full scope of it, but I know that the Georgia football team is doing a really similar thing.
Okay.
And that Kirby Smart has these things called skull sessions, where I think they do it by position group, but players spend time weekly in season to really, just as you said, get known, go deeper, okay. Like go there. Yeah. And it was a really cool story because the last NFL draft, I think they had like 8 people drafted in the first round. And there was a scout at the NFL combine. He'd never seen this before. All of the Georgia players on defense got there when the first guy, because there's like time slots, you know,
yeah.
They were all there by the time the first guy got there, and they all stayed until the last Georgia guy went, like the whole time.
Their team.
And it's super talented football players that are outrageously off the charts athletically. But when you're a scout and you see that sort of a culture and you see people that care about each other that much, and they get the linkage between that and success, you're drafting these players. And
yeah, you're drafting the culture, right?
That's why 8 players went in the first round, because people want that. And it's hard to build.
Yeah, I think, you know, I love right now all this stuff going on with Ed Reed and Bethune-Cookman, right? I'm going to need to get into it, but like Ed Reed is a culture all to himself.
Yeah.
He was a culture all to himself when he was at Miami as a player, when he was at the Ravens as a player. People gravitate to him because he has the one thing. He gives a shit.
Yep.
And I think that caring, that vulnerability, that connection is super important. So anyway.
Yeah. That process of getting people to give a shit, that's sort of what Compass is about. And it's super transformational. So I would really encourage people. Our website is igcompass.com. And we teach free things every week on how to compass. And if there's anything you do in 2023 amidst all the challenges, and there's a lot right now, I think slowing the work down a little bit and allowing people for some of that space to just hear each other's stories, you can't help but show up with a little bit more passion, intensity, care once you learn a little bit more about the people around you, especially if it's authentic. So yeah, would love to send people there to learn more about us and what we're doing.
Yeah, how'd you know I was going to ask that question? So all right. I was like, all right, let's wrap this up, Steve. So I appreciate you being empathetic, you know, having that that understanding of where we were. All right, well, hey, man, I usually say like one last thing to wrap it up, but you already did it. If they need to find you, what's your best social? Is it LinkedIn that you'll respond to?
Yeah, people. Yeah, LinkedIn is great. Yeah, you can just go after Compass on LinkedIn and you'll find us.
All right, well,
this has been phenomenal. Thank you so much for being here.
You know, you get to fall in love with your podcast guests, just like you get to fall in love with people you work with, right? And it's to a certain level.
That's
so
right.
We appreciate you, buddy. And it was great meeting.
I'll be back after season 3 of Ted Lasso, so we can
do a recap episode.
Yes, let's do a Ted Lasso recap.
All right. Well, we'll have to make sure we'll watch it. Like we're going to do, have you guys watched Morbid, like the Morbid Girls doing the Buffy the Vampire rewatcher episodes?
I haven't, but I'm intrigued.
Two millennial women watching it and like, doing like the crime junkies kind of like commentator, like one's like the narrator telling you what's going on and one's like commenting on it. It's very funny. So anyway,
I'm all in on that.
We'll do that version. All right. Thank you guys.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks guys.
Thank you for listening to the You Own the Experience podcast.
You can catch all our previous episodes at whyelitepodcast.com and learn more about our thriving staff and community by signing up for the Why Elite newsletter.
And coming soon is Staffing Huddle, an online open community dedicated to your staffing success.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Lauren. Go do something good.
Bye, guys.